with your time, whether it's time tracking or just how you approach your time. This is something that we're going to talk about today. We'll talk for an hour. I'll go a little bit past for those of you who are able to stay, since we've had some technical issues here at the beginning. But this hour is just the jumping off point. This is something that I literally spend months on with our coaching students because it's so fundamental. And the thing is that so many of the different issues that you encounter with your travel writing often trace back to how you are tracking, managing, thinking about your time. These can be issues as diverse as having a lot of different things on your plate. Jade had mentioned in the chat box that she's balancing between different things, and she is somebody who's balancing between different writing projects. There's other people that I coach who have very disparate things they're doing. I have one person that I coach who is becoming certified as a Zumba instructor, another one who's becoming certified as a yoga instructor, and then they both have other commitments that they do as well. And the one who's a Zumba instructor had told me recently that she's doing that. She also has a conference that she's helping organize, and that she feels like she does work on those other ones because it's easier, because she already knows what to do for those, because she's further along and she feels closer to seeing a reality from those, as opposed to travel writing, which she's completely new to and doing a lot of learning. And that can be a time dilation effect that we don't always notice. We don't always separate the fact that we are making choices about how to spend our time that are based on feelings and priorities, and that time equals money as a business equation is way oversimplified, but also true. And so we have to figure out what that equation is for all of us. And that's what we're going to look at today. Because if you caught the newsletter or the blog post related to today's call, so much of the, whether it's emotion or fear, avoidance, so many of these different things that we have that affect our ability to reach our travel writing goals or to accomplish things that we want to accomplish in relating to our travel writing, whether that's pitching big publications or getting big stories done that we're not accustomed to. So much of that is inherently an issue of time management. But time management, I hate that term. I think it's something that's really gotten a lot of definitions and sentiments associated with it that divorce it from the way that we actually need to look at it, which is that we are managers of the resources available to us as small business owners. And when we don't have a lot of other assets, our most important resource is our time. So let's just look at what we're going to look at today. Obviously, a lot of things that you guys have dropped in the chat box, I'll just go back through those again now that you guys can hear me. We talked about balancing between different priorities, different things that are on your plate in terms of things outside of travel writing, which I know many, many, if not most, or really nearly all of you have things that you do besides travel writing. And everything that we're going to talk about today obviously extends past just your travel writing. This is about how you approach your philosophy for time in all of your business life. Obviously, your personal life should be different, and we should have a less structured approach to time in our personal lives. Some of the other things that you guys had mentioned in the chat box that we're definitely going to look at is the balance between recurring work and long-term projects and short-term work, right? I feel like this recurring work versus one-off dichotomy is something that everybody struggles with because it's constantly changing. It's constantly changing because the type of work that you enjoy changes, the relationships that you have with your clients change, your clients might change because some of them have gone under. There's a lot of different things regarding that balance, which affect your time, but also comes back to priorities, right? So as we're talking about time management, there's going to be some other little psychological business-oriented things that creep in here as well. A couple other great things that people said that we're going to incorporate as well are, somebody said my own wheel spinning. That's a great one. And I've got some really nice little exercises that I do with coaching students that you guys can pick and choose from what's the best one for you to get a handle on that wheel spinning kind of thing. Somebody says they have recurring assignments that they do every week, but they make it hard to find time to pitch outside. And we'll look at how to make sure that you're being really clear about that. And then a lot of people had questions about ideas and selecting the right publication to pitch. And what I mean by questions, not questions about how to do it, but they were saying that that's something that is a big point of either too much time or stress for them right now. So we'll look at that as well. So specifically what I've got on the agenda, and I'm going to incorporate those things that you guys had mentioned as well. And any of you have joined us later, just let me know in the chat box at any time something that you feel like is a big, if not time suck, as in it simply takes up a lot of your time, or something that you just feel like is taking way more time than it should. And that might be something that you have to do that is keeping you from doing other things, like Lisa said, or it might be something that you are trying to do and it's just taking so much time you can't get it done. So the first thing I want to talk about, like I mentioned, is your philosophy on time as relates to your business. We're going to talk about this. This is really the important starting point here, because we often don't realize that we have a philosophy on time. You might think, oh, well, perhaps I should get one, but you already do have one. It's how you are deciding how to use your time and choose how to use your time presently. So I'm going to ask you some questions, and you can do some thinking of your of that on your own. You don't have to share it in the chat box unless you want to. And then we're going to look at the big offender. So some of these are the ones that you guys mentioned earlier. I've got a couple on slides for us to look at. Some of them are similar, but we'll also attack some other ones. And then we're going to look at some approaches to time tracking. And when I say approaches, I mean both physical methods, software, but really also the organization methods, because this is where people get hung up. I've had a lot of coaching students that I send off to do time tracking as a super starting point, as the very, very first time they're ever doing time tracking in their freelance life, to bring me back something that we can look at together and start to dig in now that we have that data and see what savings, time savings we can make, or what insights that gives us about other things like priorities that could be shifted, clients that you really didn't realize were really not worth your time, things like that. So we'll talk about approaches from both the system way, as well as the technological standpoint, as well as the physical organization thereof. And I wanted to take a little bit of time to say that today, because this stuff about time is all about that. Dealing with how you spend your time, really looking it in the face and dealing with it, is scary and painful and often creates avoidance and procrastination, which is funny because the idea of tracking your time is to avoid procrastination, right? But often confronting the issues that you are really running into and seeing that you do need to change your priorities is not the easiest thing to go through. So that being said, let's talk about philosophy. But go ahead and share with us, if you don't mind, what you think your philosophy about how you use your time is as a small business owner, as a freelance travel writer at this moment. So to expand about that a little bit, so what I mean by that, when I mean about your philosophy, is how do you think time is money, period, simply? That's your philosophy. Do you feel like your time is your greatest resource, which means it is the most valuable thing to you, and you want to use it to the best of your ability? You'll see there's all these cliches about time, right? Time is money. Time is my greatest resource. And they play out into a lot of different things. Donna M. has a question, what I think or say versus what I actually do, which is great. Donna, put both. Put what you think and say as well as what you actually do, or tell us what the difference is, or you can keep that to yourself. It's a little too personal. So the philosophy that I mean here is it can be one of these trite little expressions. You can have some deeper thoughts about it, but it does usually come down or come back to something pretty simple, which is, for instance, for me, I always feel like there's never enough time. And what I mean by that is not that I feel like, oh, I'm not going to get through everything by the end of the day, so why not? I feel like I know that everything that I would like to do is not going to happen. So I need to make sure that each moment of my time is being spent on the thing that I can best make progress on in that minute. I want to make sure that I am creating things, that I am actually accomplishing, finishing things as soon as I can, because there's not enough time. I won't finish everything. So for instance, that might be one that I could say about myself. Let's see what some other people have to say. So some people have, my true philosophy is that time equals quality. I like that. The more time I spend actively writing a piece, the better that it is. That second part is interesting, and I think that's a great thing for us to dig into. Someone else says, time is a major commodity, so I'm trying to focus only on work that is worth my time and I enjoy. That's another really great thing. Things that are worth your time and that you enjoy. That's a great way to look at it. Let me see some other ones that we've got in here. Engaging in activities that work towards an end product. There's never enough time, including enough time to do what I want to do. That's something that we can definitely work on. I think I'm too much of a perfectionist and spend too much time on everything. Yeah, I think that's a great observation. But think about kind of what perhaps you, the person who said that, Patty, perhaps you're in the same vein as Donna, as you feel the more time you actively spend on something, the better it is. That could be a philosophy on time that you have. Lori says it's her greatest resource, but she doesn't always behave like that's her philosophy. Yeah, and I think that's very true. Let's see what Stephanie says. I feel like value equals time. I spend some time educating clients on the value of my services / writing. I think that's a great one. I want to see which Stephanie this is. Oh, great. Okay, yeah. So I think that what Lori said here, I don't always behave like that's my philosophy. I feel like I've definitely seen a couple of you guys say that, and that's often really true. And this is why I wanted to start this discussion before I tell you tactics, before I tell you, you know, I could just write a blog post and tell you set up this time tracker and use it in this way. But if you don't think about what is the philosophy you have behind how you spend your time right now, even if you start tracking your time, even if you have that data, you won't either learn from it or make changes based on it, because you won't see the gap between what it is that you want to achieve and how your approach to your time right now is limiting that for you. And Elise has also added, she has a huge scarcity around time, yet she wastes it herself all the time and then she hates herself. I think that's a really great thing also that is really important, back to what Lori said about not feeling like she always behaves like that's her approach. I think this is really common to have a sense of hypocrisy around our time philosophy, that we think of ourselves, perhaps like Patty said, as perfectionists, but we also think of ourselves as people who deliver. We think of ourselves as people who create things and get them out there. And you know that if you have a blog, you deliver regularly and you also deliver to your clients. And those two things are in counterpoint, right? Feeling like the more time you put into something, the better it is, but also feeling like you're a person who creates often and creates regularly. So that's why this philosophy is a really important point to start with. And I might have said this in the part when the sound wasn't on, so apologize if I'm repeating, but it's really important with all these discussions we're having around time to check in with yourself regularly about this. So that doesn't just mean your time tracker. It also means your philosophy about time. And how do we check in? This is the great thing. You gather data. You look at the data. You look at what's happening in the world, specifically the world about how you use your time. And you see if that aligns with your thoughts. You see if your philosophy, your thoughts, your position, your values actually are coming out on the page. And in this case, when I say on the page, I mean in the data of your time tracker. And if they're not, that's a sign that you actually have a different value that you're not being honest with yourself about. And that's huge. It's so difficult often for people who don't have a coach or some other person who's mirroring at them what they're really doing to learn those things. And so one of the biggest reasons that I harp and harp and harp and harp about time tracking is that it is the absolute simplest way to come up against those things on your own that are the difference, the disconnect between what you do and what you say you want to do. And to me, that's literally the reason why time tracking is, quote unquote, the answer to everything. I really feel like that. And that's why we're going to talk after this webinar about goals. And we're going to talk after that webinar about pitches, because all of these things build on each other. So let's get back to these snags. We talked about this for those of you who've joined us later in the call. We talked about, at the very beginning, I had a slide up. I'll just go back and show you, about what takes you, quote unquote, too much time in your freelance travel writing business. And that could be things that you have to do. That can be things like client work or things of that nature that you're being paid for that you just have to do. Or it could be things, you know, I believe somebody mentioned social media. It could be things that you don't necessarily have to do or don't have to spend as much time for. But I had asked earlier on in the call about what takes you personally too much time. So I've got some pulled up from the chat box from earlier that I'm going to look at. I've also got some that I've put on the slides. And I want to go through and look at these snags. But first, I feel like they more or less fall into these three categories. You'll notice I don't have writing on here, which is because I think a lot of the snags that you have in writing are actually within these other areas, largely research, because I know a couple of people have commented on feeling like they are a bit of a perfectionist at times, but I think the work of actual writing, what I have seen by and large in the time trackers of myself and of other people, the part that tends to be outsized in terms of the time that it takes is actually this research area. So I've collected a lot of snags from you. I've got some here that I want to talk about. But before that, what do I mean when I say tracking your time or knowing about your time, being aware on your time? What am I really talking about here? There's the very, very facile sort of way of doing it, which I don't have a slide on this because I'm sure you're all familiar. Just to say hours, just to say 3 hours on X blog post, 2 hours on preparing slides for webinar, 6 hours of work today. Those are all blocks. They're task-based blocks. They are a way of tracking that's related, say, to a deliverable about something. And they definitely are a form of tracking. But for what we are going to talk about, I'm going to challenge you to look at it differently. So the very first thing that I want to talk about is a productivity heat map. I'm going to actually pull this up on the full screen so you guys can see it in larger glory. Great. So you should be seeing this productivity heat map. I'm going to zoom it down so you can see the whole thing. Some of you guys may have seen this. This is a link that we have on our blog. We also have it in our book. Productivity heat maps are something that are a very good starting point to time tracking. So if you are new to time tracking, I don't recommend that you just jump in right away with the type of thing that I was just talking about, because that's often what people think about as time tracking. They think about writing down, I spent 2.5 hours making slides, or, you know, researching this blog post, or this whole blog post took me 5 hours. We want something much more, you could call it granular, but I actually want to call it telling. We want something, we want to collect data that gives us actionable intel on our freelance lives. And that starts with productivity, because it's very easy to think of time in terms of minute and hours and the tick tick of the clock as something that looks the same no matter how you're spending it. But we all know in reality that sometimes time feels like it moves faster. Sometimes it feels like it moves slowly. Sometimes it feels like it's not moving at all. And that time is in many ways relative. But what is it relative to? It's relative to how motivated you feel. That's kind of, I think, a good gauge of how productive one is. When you feel very motivated, you have your eye on the goal. You work briskly as possible through the task at hand, and you avoid temptation for distraction. So this heat map right here, the link to it, I'm going to give you the link to download directly and the blog post about this topic. So if you want to download this heat map yourself, you can find it here. And we've got a larger blog specifically on this topic about how to use the heat map, which you can find here. This heat map is designed to be used, you could do it once, but it's better to do it a couple times, but it's designed to be used to track not just the dimension of work being completed or of which type of work is being completed, but of how you feel in relation to that time. Because as we spoke about a lot at the beginning of the call, many issues related to time and how time is employed in your business and how it affects your business and what you're able to accomplish in your business actually tie back to that feeling about that time, that relativity about that time, which is really actually productivity, right? So productivity and time management are often deployed as sort of synonyms, but they're quite different, right? Managing your time is the act of keeping an eye on it and using it effectively. Whereas productivity is a mode of working in which you are being your best self and bringing your most presentness to the task at hand. So what you do with this heat map, and this is why I recommend starting here because it will really inform what you do with your other time tracking, is to write down your average day by beginning with a real day. Again, we want to always, with time tracking, begin with reality in order for it to give, for us to have the best information. So, you know, for instance, I'm not a morning person. Even when I'm in Europe, I kind of work on relatively North American hours. And because I have to stay up late at night doing phone calls, I have coaching calls that start like at 12:30 often when I'm in Europe. So on this heat map, for me, this whole section is going to be pretty empty. I have somebody else that I coach who, I don't know that she's still doing this, but she had a really inspiring and exuberant program of early morning work that she was pursuing. She would get up somewhere around here. She would have her bulletproof coffee. She'd sit down and she'd have an uninterrupted block of work time from here. And that would be her prime work time. Whereas for me, I know my hours where I'll sit down and be able to write 3 completely finished blog posts in an hour if I don't have other work to do. That all happens more like over here for me. So this is what is going to be different for each of you. This map is not just about how you deploy your time, what your time is attached to, what task is being completed or worked on at least in that time, but this is about how you feel during that time. So you can color code this if you want. You can make it red when it's really hot and you're getting a lot done. You can make it blue when you're feeling really low energy. But this is really the starting point to tracking your time. Don't start tracking your time by looking at your day just as it is and marking what you get done. Mark your day as it is and what you get done, yes, but also how you feel about it. Are you getting highly creative work done? Are you working very fast? Are you very focused? So this is the very first step to tracking your time as a freelancer. Let me go back over to the slides. So that's your very first step, okay? Tracking doesn't begin just with logging of time. It begins with the contemplation of the efficacy of the time that you're currently spending. That will give you a sense of zones. When I say zones, I mean blocks. I wanted to pull this back out so you can see the whole thing. I mean blocks where you're red hot and blocks where you're blue cool, where you could get really, really boring stuff done. You can do a lot of cut and pasting, but you would not be the ideal person to write a blog post on a quick timeline at that hour. Why does this matter? Because if you don't have that information about when you work best at different types of work, and it's important to keep in mind that they are different types of work. There are different types of work that you need to accomplish. Let's go back up here. Each of these things are different types of work. Emails. This is a reactive type of work. Research. This is not a creative type of work in terms of generating new ideas creative, but it can be a creative type of work in terms of asking smart interview questions, you know, finding neat directions for your stories. And then pitching is seen as one task. It's seen as this type of very creative work. We have to pull things out of nowhere, but it's composed of different types of work. There's the more passive familiarizing yourself with magazines. Then there's the creative and hard decision-making period of deciding on an idea or matching it to a magazine. But then there's the more low-key fact-checking and the, you know, kind of creative but not generative creative figuring out what information needs to go into your pitch. So what will happen is that when you do this productivity math, when you find when you're red hot and blue cool and when you're just black, like don't try to make me do work right now, you'll find that knowing that and then setting up a time tracking practice, which I'm going to go into, things will jump out at you immediately. But if you don't do that heat mapping of your productivity and your energy and how you feel about that time beforehand, they won't jump out as quick, especially not if you're doing it on your own, like without me to walk you through it. So let's look at time tracking as the physical act of it, okay? So this is my computer level time tracker, which means this isn't tracking a lot of other things that I would do, like going to conferences or things like that, or teaching. This is my computer level time tracker for all of the month of February. Now, A couple interesting things to note here. So sometimes I forget to hit play on my time tracker, but I've usually got it going most of the time on the computer. So I logged about 100 hours over 4 weeks. I wanted to use February because it's a 4 week month. So it's a good indicator. So that means that maybe 25 hours a week I'm working. But that sounds weird because I work all the time. I'm working like tons and tons and tons of hours. So this doesn't include the time that I'm on my phone. I don't have the time tracker on my phone. So I do a lot of emails and sometimes writing on my phone. So that's not in here. Like I said, it doesn't include time when I'm teaching. During February, I had a week-long boot camp that I was running. So I had lots of hours that I was teaching, driving, cooking food, being on tours with people. I had a couple conferences that I went to that are also on here. But when you think of it, it's like 25 hours a week. Like, wow, that doesn't seem like a lot of time. How do you fit all of the stuff into that time? So that's one of the first stops when you begin tracking your time, is to just look at it in a very high level way. How much time am I actually spending? And does that number shock me? Does that number make me feel like, oh my God, I need to be more cognizant of the time I'm spending researching? Or if you're a perfectionist, the number of times that I'm looking over something to make sure it's perfect before it goes out, because my time is way more limited than I possibly thought that it was. So that's the first stop when you're checking your time, when you're tracking your time. So remember, we talked about productivity and how that's first. It's first because it comes before you start doing this tracker. It's a separate process that you want to do before you start tracking every single thing that you do. But you'll see on here, you can see the actual specific physical tracking of every single thing that I do. So I've got on here setting up newsletter. This is the Monday newsletter. I've got time interacting with my assistant. I've got a meeting that I didn't put on here what this meeting is. And it immediately makes me curious. I want to go back to my time tracker and figure out what that is. I probably have to look at my calendar. But then these other ones are very nicely labeled. So it says different people that I coach, how much time I was on that call. So you should be seeing my reporting page. Great. All right. So you'll see on here this pie chart, right? This right now is just on this week, which has just gotten started. But let's go back to last month like we were looking at, okay? So you'll see I've got this pie chart here, and it's got so many different colors going on. That's because right now I have my tracker set to show you projects. But I don't want to start with projects. I want to start by talking about categories, okay? So whatever time tracker you use, if you're doing a physical time tracker on paper, if you're doing it in Excel, if you're doing it in an application, there's a couple ones that I'll talk to you guys about. The very, very first step is to decide what areas of responsibility to track, because it matters, in the reporting. So this isn't something to be taken lightly, how you do the big buckets of responsibility. So when I used to be doing just writing, let me see if I can go back a couple of years. When I was doing just writing, well, that month doesn't have a lot of work in it, does it? My areas of responsibility were built around my clients. They were built around specific names of specific clients. Let's see if it'll go all the way back to 2015. No. And for many of you, that will be the case. Here we go. All right. So what you'll see now is that I have names of specific clients. I have a magazine client. I've got working on my book. I decided that was a client. I've got admin. And that was the only other client I was working on that month. So like many of you that have a blog, I have some different notes on here for different blogs or other projects that I would be doing. For those of you, I know Jade had mentioned this earlier, so I'll use her as an example. Some of you might be familiar with, we shared some of the things that Jade is working on in the annual review webinars last year. She was kind enough to let us workshop her goals for the year ahead. So she's got a book that she's working on. She has content marketing work that she does for specific clients, but largely through an agency. And then she has magazine pitching that she's working on. So for her, she might also have an admin category, which is her emails and all those kinds of things. For her, she doesn't have her own blog, like I have Dream of Travel Writing, but she's got a book that she's working on. And she has several other clients that she's working on. So her categories might be one category for the agency to which she gets a bunch of content marketing work. One category might be a client that she contracts with directly for content marketing work. One category might be her book, but a different category might be marketing her book. It might be working on getting an agent for her book. And then she could have a category for magazine work, but she's not working largely with any specific magazines right now. So she might just have magazines. And then over time, as she builds a relationship with certain magazines editors, those magazines might get their own category. Like I have one on here for Group Travel Leader. Some other folks, let's take an example of somebody who is running a travel blog. I know a lot of you also have blogs. So you might have different categories that are related to your blog. You might have content creation for this blog. You might have promotion for this blog. And you might have admin for this blog. Those might be three different categories that you assign. And then you would have another category that would be magazines. And then you would have another category that would be, say, travel, because you travel a lot. And that travel is going to be sometimes things for your blog, but it's going to also be sometimes things that you pitch. But that's a big category for you. And so in there, you might also bundle travel planning, which is something you'll see I have on here as a category as well. So the point of categories is that they should be something, I'm going to go back to last month, they should be something that is large enough that when you look at it in this pie chart, the same way that I had you, that I said the first step when you have your tracker is to look at this hourly thing up here. So in this particular month that we're looking at, March 2 years back, I had 110 hours that I tracked that month. After I look at that, the very next thing I'm going to look at for shock factor is this chart. And I'm going to see that my book took 30% of my time that month. And that writing for this other client took another 30% of my time that month. And I'm going to ask myself, how do I feel about that? Does that feel right? Or does that feel out of whack? So one of the things that you're noticing here, as I'm telling you how to look at your time, is that we don't start by looking at how much time did I spend on this blog post? How much did I spend on this pitch? How much time did I spend writing for this one magazine? Because that is not where we get big insights that drive decisions. We can get insights from those that drive decisions, but the changes to your philosophy or how you're actually implementing your philosophy, or if you're not implementing your philosophy, come from looking at this much higher level data, which requires tracking over time. You can't just track for 1 month or 1 week or 1 day and get this level of insight. So let's look again. I'm looking at category level. I've got way too many categories now. So this is last month for me. This is my time tracker by category. So what are some things that are big? This is all sorts of webinars or the things like that that I do for you guys. Admin took a big time because I was training a new assistant. Travel planning took a big time. I could look at that and be like, Jesus, like 14 hours on travel planning, that's insane. But I batch my travel planning and I'm doing all the travel planning now for between now and October or September. So to me, that's okay to have that much time on travel planning right now. Coaching. I've got some time on the database and I've got some time. Oh, this is actually where the VA is on management. So I'm looking at this and seeing, does this jive with how I think I'm spending my time? I look at those before I look at individual things. So again, whatever type of time tracker you use, if you're doing an Excel sheet, for instance, you want to have a column that's by category so that you can sort and so that you can look at it on this level. But then you also want to have a category that's at the level of projects, which is different than specific tasks. So I want to pull up for you guys, and we're going to have to go back to my main tracker now. We're going to exit this report view. So if anybody has other questions about reports, I'm happy to go back to that later, but I'm just going to exit out of report and go back to the main tracker for now. You'll see here, sorry, Patty had a question, let me pop over. How does it know what you're doing? Do you click on a category before you start a new task? So Patty, that is a question that depends on which specific time tracking solution you use. And I don't want to advocate any, I'll tell you more about this one that I use and why I use it in a little bit, but literally you don't need to use technology for this. You can do it. I have somebody that I know does it in her notebook. She just writes it down. You can do it in Excel. I have a lot of clients that just do it in Excel. So don't worry about how it's done in this particular app. If you want to use this app or any other app, there'll be workflows within that app in their customer support that have videos that show you how to do those things. But the idea is that you want to make sure that you're not just tracking the name of the task. You want to make sure that you're not just tracking blog posts and you're not just tracking finding images. You want to make sure that you have a larger category, which would be your blog or a client's blog or something like that, that that goes into first, because that's how we get big insights, is making sure that we have a category attached to whatever that task is. Okay, so let's go over here. Let's talk a little bit more about the project level. So the project level, project would mean, it can be different things. And I want to encourage you to think of categories and projects, which are is anything that's a sub-level below categories. I want to encourage you to think of those generously. So basically, a category is a big bucket. It's an area of responsibility. It's something that you do something for pretty much every month, but you have lots of different things you might do for that. A project can either be something recurring, such as a column that you write for a magazine every month, but it can also be a single thing. It can be one iteration of writing that column for a magazine. It can also be a task. So for instance, here you'll see I've pulled up fall trip planning, which you might think of as a task. It's an action. It's a type of action. It does kind of have a beginning and an end, because once I've got all those trips planned, it's over. But I also have other categories. For instance, I just have one here that's email. So I have a quote unquote project. That's what they call it in office time. But I have this second level tier. I have this for emails. I have it for creating newsletters. I often use the second level tier for repeatable tasks. So the thing here is not necessarily to think in a stickler way about, you know, I need a time tracking solution that allows me to do this, this, or that, or what does my time tracking solution allow me to do and to be bounded by that, but to know that you need a higher level area of responsibility level check-in, and then you have a next level check-in. So I'm just going to go back to that one we were going to look at. You have a next level check-in below that before you get to tasks. So there should be three levels, okay? And so this is what I mean. So this is that mid-level, we'll call it like the middle manager of our task tracking system, okay, time tracking system. So this middle manager that we're looking at right now is fall trip planning. So like I said, I batch my travel, I batch how I'm gonna plan it. I get it done all at once so that I don't have to be stressed about it or think anymore about whether I'm gonna get a good price on a flight or how I'm gonna use my points or if I'm gonna have enough points. So this category here is everything having to do with booking trips for everything that happened last year after the summer and into the winter. So everything in here, you'll see that there's different days. It goes over the course of different months. It's got stuff all the way from July and into October here. And this happens automatically with my time tracker, that it puts the time I do the task, but it has the actual time spent on that task. But then this is what I want to draw your attention to over here is the notes. Okay. So there were two flights that I needed to get. Something happened. I was sick and I had to replan a whole trip. And so I had to redo it. This is time I spent getting specifically flights to India. This is time that I spent looking at Airbnbs for a certain destination. I've got some that aren't labeled, which I don't love. And I recommend not doing that if you can help it, but sometimes we're stressed for time. And so we turn on our tracker and we don't write down what we've been doing. But you'll see that each of these things, like I booked three flights. What else does this say? I booked on three flights. I checked into some other flights and I worked on the activities for our boot camp that we had in the fall. This is one where I was looking for places to stay in Sydney. So what I'm seeing here in terms of this category level, project level, task level is that you don't just track tasks, okay? Your tasks go by certain designations, whether you want to call that project or it's an ongoing repeatable thing that you do, like newsletters or trip planning or something like that. Each of those specific things can get separated. And it's very useful that they do get separated, because what happens when you're able to separate them is that, say you have something like writing an article, okay? If you are separating the tasks that come under writing that article by writing the pitch, emailing that editor, emailing sources to set up interviews, doing those interviews, incorporating, perhaps you have to transcribe some, those quotes from your interviews into the piece, doing additional research for that piece. If you have separate time trackers for each of those things, that is when the good stuff happens. Carrie, I don't understand your question, but I think that the answer is that it's not applicable. So the meat of this, guys, the meat of this tracking is that we want to be detailed, but not in a way that's onerous to ourselves past what's actually needed. So for those of you guys that are perfectionists, like I said, if you miss filling in a couple of these, that's fine. But it's very useful to separate out within writing a specific blog post or within writing a specific article what you have done in each time segment and keeping it tight, keeping it specific, So if I'm, for instance, working on a newsletter and I find that an email came in, I've actually stopped and I'm responding to that email instead, and I didn't change my tracker originally, I will actually go back and I will pause my tracker. I'll look at how much time I've spent more or less on that email, and I'll go put that in customer emails instead or something like that, or I'll put it in event planning, or I'll put it in coaching students, or I'll put that time wherever it's meant to go. So on the one hand, I'm not just letting a bucket of time incorporate lots of different types of tasks. But on the other hand, for instance, for this webinar, I wasn't just tracking the time that I'm spending doing the webinar with you guys. I'm also tracking time that I spent on the slides. I have a different thing where I track writing the blog post related to webinars. So that being said, let's go back to the slides because I want to talk about different time snags and how we're going to track those. So let me give you the slides again. So I talked right now specifically about a couple of these time snags. You guys had mentioned a bunch of time snags earlier. I feel like a lot of these fall into here. So let's look at how we track some of these, okay? So research. This is something that I think most of you, most people that I talk to, for sure, specifically, aren't either tracking their research at all, or they're calling their research part of their writing time. And this is one of the biggest things that comes up when you feel like your time isn't being used effectively. It's that you're bundling a lot of these different pieces, like I was talking about, into one, rather than saying, well, I actually spent 37 minutes looking things up, and then I actually started writing, and the writing only took me about 20 minutes. So when you look at the amount of time it took you to do a blog post as 57 minutes without knowing that 37 minutes of it was research, it's very easy to say it took me 57 minutes to write that post, but the writing actually took 20 minutes. And we can look at that 37 minutes and see how much of that research did you actually need to do? How did that research actually add to your piece? So I had one person who had joined us for a retreat that we spent a lot of time talking about this. She has a blog. She has a big blog she's had for a long time. And she said it takes her about, she had some data for me. She referenced a particular post she'd written recently. And she said it took her 4 hours and 10 minutes. And then we started to break that out. How much of that time was spent with her finding the photos? How much of that time was spent with her writing? And what we realized was that there were two different types of research that she was doing. She was doing research to see what had already been written, and she was doing research that was fact-checking things she wanted to add to her piece. And some of that research, primarily the stuff to check what had already been written, she really didn't need to spend as much time on. A lot of that was her, you know, perfectionist or just interest in the topic that she was putting time into that. So I've got research on here as one of the top snags that I want you guys to be tracking, because this is literally the number one waste time. And when I say waste time, I mean not that the time is inherently wasted, but the number one source of time that we are not noticing, that we don't know. It's essentially like just disappearing. We don't know how that time is being spent. So whatever type of writing you guys are doing, whether it's for your own blog, other blog clients, for magazines, you're working on pitches, you're working on finding editors to pitch your book on, you are doing research. Sometimes that research is out when you're traveling. Sometimes that research is on the computer. Sometimes that research is going to be with physical magazines. This is the very first step for getting control of your time, is accurately, honestly with yourself, noticing, being aware of where that time is going. So like I said, you can track this physically in a notebook. I have somebody who does that and she's great at it. Patricia, I know that you just joined us. We're going to touch on that in a little bit. So like I said, you can do this in a notebook. You can do it in Excel. You can do it in a time tracker. You can have a time tracker that's on your phone. You can have a time tracker on a laptop. But research is the number one place to start. Now, I have emails on here. I think emails are something that nobody mentioned, actually, when I asked you guys early on about what you thought was a time suck for you or what took up too much time. I know for me, this is like the number one offender in terms of how much time I spend. Like, I cannot I can't even, like, if I answered all the emails, I just saw 6 emails that I don't even know why these people are emailing me, inviting me to PR things or different things like that. Like, if I really just was on email, it would be the only thing I did. I would get no other work done. And I know a lot of people who feel this way, and a lot of people who have big blogs also feel this way. So if you have a blog, you might be in this situation. Email is something we're also really bad about tracking. And part of it is because we do some of it on our phone and some of it on our computer. And you definitely aren't noticing those little times when you were doing email on your phone, when you're waiting to pick your kid up from soccer, or when you're on the subway. And so this can be a really big time suck, where the time is just going away. Perhaps it's time you do need to spend. Perhaps it could be batched and done some other time. But email might be creeping into little gaps of time that you could actually be spending doing other work. And you could just batch all your email into a certain part of your day, and it fits in that part of the day, and you just got to get through all of it then. And that'll force you to write shorter emails, emails that are more to the point, emails that include enough information that there doesn't need to be a back and forth thread about it. There's been books and books and books written about how to write emails so that you get fewer of them and so you get through your email more quickly. So I don't want to talk too much about that. But I want to encourage you that if you are not being cognizant in some way of how you're tracking emails, you need to start. And especially if you have clients. If you are at a point where you are pitching magazine editors and hearing responses, or you do content marketing, or you blog for different clients, you need to be tracking how you do those emails, because that needs to factor into how you think about how much time a specific client takes. I often see writers who just feel like some client is just taking way too much time, more time than they're being paid for. They just feel like they don't like working with the client. And it almost inevitably comes back to the amount of time being spent communicating over email with that client, and how it's not being tracked and not being factored into the rates and your estimation of how the rate aligns with the work that you are doing. So I don't have a slide on this, because we've talked about this in a lot of other webinars in the past, but I like to think of $100 an hour as a great goal to shoot for, much more than a dollar a word, in terms of something that you should have a goal for yourself in terms of your income. So right now, though, I know some of you, I've worked with you either in person at events or I coach you. I know for a number of you, $100 an hour is not a realistic goal at this moment. But if you can set that benchmark for yourself, that you want all your clients to be at $100 an hour, or $75 an hour, or $50 an hour, whatever that dollars per hour benchmark is for you, then what that means is you take, I'm not going to pop back over to it now, but I'll just go to the slide. You take this pie chart that we talked about, and at the end of every month, you look and you say, okay, this magazine paid me this many dollars this month. How many hours did I spend on that? Am I at $50 an hour? Am I at $12 an hour? Am I at $125 an hour? And you make decisions about who you're going to continue to work with based on that number, based on that dollars per hour number and your ability to change it. So it might be that right now you're doing $22 an hour for a big client of yours that you can't afford to just let go of that client. What can you do to bring that $22 per hour number up? You look at your specific task data. You look back at what you tracked. You look back at what actually went into those hours that made your rate $22 an hour. Did you spend a lot of time looking up things to write about your blog post? Did you spend a lot of time coordinating interviews with sources for that article? Did you spend a lot of time on the phone with sources for that article? Did you spend a lot of time emailing with that editor to clarify things? Or did you spend a lot of time editing, re-editing, writing, rewriting? Did you spend a lot of time structuring that piece? What did you spend a lot of time on? And then you look at how to minimize that. That's where the fun work begins. That's where the work that brings your hourly rate up and makes you feel good about what you're earning from the clients that you're working for happens. It happens on your end, and it's not necessarily related to getting higher rates. It's related to doing the work at a better per hour rate. Candy has a question. Is this email tracking just for travel writing? I hate to say I don't have a personal life, but I would say I maybe spend like 5 minutes a week maximum on personal emails. So all of my email tracking is related to travel writing, but I have it separated. And I recommend you separate your email tracking as well as much as you can. So anything that has to do with a client, like if you have a writing client that you work for regularly, I would put it in the project related to either the story you're writing for that client or that client. If you are doing emails related to something you do emails about a lot, like if you have a blog and you respond to a lot of emails related to your blog, I would have that middle manager level, that project level. I would have a whole project that's just about responding to emails about your blog. I would have a project or that middle manager level that's just about emails related to pitching. And then you can include in there also following up on your pitches, right? That's an amount of time that I think people often just don't track. They don't think about those, like, you know, half hour spurts where you go through your sent folder and you follow up on as many pitches that you've sent as you can. So you can, I suppose, think of it as just using the email tracking for work related purposes, but I don't know if I would quite say that it's just for travel writing. I would say you would definitely want to do it for all work related to clients and your own blog, anything that you would think of as time that to you equals money, or time that you would like to be earning money. That's a good sort of standard for the emails that you should be tracking. If it's like writing to your mom, like an update about what's going on in your life, and you don't do that by phone, then obviously that's not something that you should be tracking unless you're really, really into making the most of all of your time, because right now you're trying to get a big lift in your freelance business. Okay, so let's go through a couple of these because I want to get back to talking about some specific time tracking solutions and be able to let you guys go in a reasonable amount of time as well. So we've talked about a few of these things related to pitching. I just wanted to address a couple of these and how to track them and how to approach them. Researching magazines. This is something that conversely people spend tons of time on, and I wish people would spend more time on. So it's this weird double-edged sword that I wish people would be more familiar with more magazines, but that I know a lot of people spend a lot of time going in depth with one specific magazine. And the real problem is that people often spend a lot of time going in depth with one specific magazine and don't produce a pitch out of that time. So what I'd like to say about researching magazines is that if you don't already, I highly recommend the prescription of spend 15 minutes every day. Take 15 minutes out of your social media time, or take 15 minutes out of your TV time, or take 15 minutes out of your reading What on Earth Trump Has Gotten Up To Today time, whatever that is. Take 15 minutes out of that and use that to familiarize yourselves with magazines that you didn't know about before. Even if it's not in the travel magazine database, go on Xenio. Just be familiar with more magazines for 15 minutes a day. I highly recommend it. But be very stern with yourself about time that you are spending not for a clear learning or pitching purpose, reading past articles in any magazine or just skimming that magazine. So unless you have a pitch that you've already seen in the database, a specific section works for that pitch idea, and you are looking at the magazine for the sole purpose of refining that particular pitch, you shouldn't be wasting time just flipping through magazines if it's not recreational. So read articles and magazines, great. Flip through them recreationally, great. But know that the time that you are spending working on your pitches, that the way you're looking at magazines should have a goal. It should have an objective, and that it's not the moment to just be flipping through reading whatever article interests you. You should only be looking at articles in the specific section that you're looking at to pitch. And this is a big reason why we created the travel magazine database in the first place, is that it takes minimum, if you're not familiar with breaking down a magazine, it takes minimum 2 to 3 hours to analyze a magazine and figure out which sections are open to freelancers, which one you should pitch, what's the format of those sections. And I found for my coaching students that if I had them familiarizing themselves with magazines in that way, doing those breakdowns themselves, they didn't have time to do any pitching. So I tell you this, not because I want you to go buy the travel magazine database, but because I want you to understand that if you are trying to analyze magazines yourself en masse, in bulk, like more than two a week, even two a week, you won't have time to pitch those magazines. So you need to either have a lot of time on your hands if you're going to be doing analyzation of magazines yourself, or you need to be really, really realistic about what you're looking at when you look at those magazines so that you don't just fall down the rabbit hole of reading and analyzing and becoming an expert in that magazine and not pitching them and pitching the crap out of them to make money for yourself with that time that you have spent. Okay, now I know a lot of people talked about things around ideas. Ideas is also like a huge time suck. And any of you that have traveled with me, I know a couple of people on the call have been on a boot camp with me, or perhaps some of you may have been on a press trip with me related to a conference or something, have seen that I'm like, I'll be on a tour and I'm taking notes on the tour. And every time I hear an idea for a magazine, I immediately email it to myself separately. This is an idea. We have a whole webinar coming up related specifically to having ideas, tracking ideas, the organization thereof. But in terms of matching an idea to a magazine, what takes people, what causes people to say that it takes them too long is almost always, I'll just give you the answer right here because it's so easy. It's almost always a lack of knowledge. And that lack of knowledge is one of two things. And you'll, when I tell you, you'll be able to figure out for yourself now. Every time you feel like it's taking you too long, it's always going to be one of these two things. Either you're not familiar enough with the magazine markets, so you just don't know enough magazines to know what would be a match, or you're not familiar enough with what makes an idea saleable. So these play out in two ways. If you're not familiar enough with the markets, it means that you are trying to have an idea separately, as in you didn't find a magazine and come up with an idea specifically for that magazine. So you have a wild idea. You have an idea that you caught in the wild that's separate, and you're now trying to find a home for it. And that's an exhausting, grueling process because you're not matching the idea. When it takes you a long time, it's because what you're doing is actually familiarizing yourself with magazines and seeing a lot of magazines that might work for other ideas but don't work for the idea that you have at hand. So in that case, you need to see that prescription I said earlier, which is spend 15 minutes a day familiarizing yourself with magazines. Now, in the second case, this plays out in the real world as you think that you have an idea and you think perhaps that you have a match for that idea. And you're trying to write the pitch, or maybe you're trying to match it to a market. That could also be the case. And you keep flip-flopping about what that story could be. So what that means is sometimes, you know, you encountered something really great. I'll use this alpaca farm. I keep using this as an example. During the recent boot camp, I went to an alpaca farm. Interesting experience. Lots of different story ideas. So at this alpaca farm, there was a store that was just beautiful. It would look like a boutique that you'd find here in New York City, but it's like in the middle of this farm, 3 hours outside of the city. Is that store itself an idea? It can be, maybe for the right magazine, for the right section, for the right editor. Maybe it actually needs to be a roundup. Maybe it needs to be a profile on the people who own that store, but just the store, it's not really saleable. And so if you feel like you are trying to write a pitch or trying to make a match and you're just not finding matches, even when you have magazines in front of you, it's more an issue of familiarization with what is an idea than about knowing enough markets. So those are the two things that come down to time taking too long, things taking too long about finding ideas. So if you're suffering from either of those things, the answer is either you need to get to know the markets or you need to spend some more time figuring out what is an idea, what an article looks like. And that can be accomplished by reading articles or taking Idea Fest program, of course, but reading articles specifically rather than just getting to know more magazines. Now, fact checking for pitches and also fact checking for writing. This is a huge one that people take way too much time on. And I've got a great tip for this that comes courtesy of somebody who I know was on the call earlier. I don't know if she's with us, somebody that I coach. We had this great thing. So she really loves to deep dive on reading about things. And she has a lot of clients that she works for regularly that require a lot of research. And so she's out there writing and she does some Google searching and she comes up with some things that she's reading in order to figure out what she's going to write in her post. So what we realized though is that a lot of those tabs that she's opening, a lot of the things that she's reading might be interesting, but don't actually need to be read in order to accomplish the piece of writing that she's writing at this moment. So what we did was that we had her create a second browser window. So she's working her piece, she's doing research. Every time she encounters something that seems interesting, but Maybe she doesn't need to read it right now. She puts it in the second browser window. We call it the read later window. Now, what happened is I think she did this for one day and she came back to me and said, oh my God, I realized there's 2 to 3 hours of reading in that other window. And we kept it there in case she really needed those things to put her pieces together. So they were there so she could come back to them. And it didn't sound like there was really anything in there that she needed to read, but she said that she could not believe how much time, reading time, she would have spent without noticing. So if fact-checking is a place that takes you a lot of time, I highly recommend the second browser window approach. So let's just take, I think we talked through most of this already, but I just want to take a quick tour through this and then also the time tracking solutions that I recommend. So what should you be tracking? There's been a couple questions about this. People ask, you know, should I be tracking email for this? How should I do recurring versus non-recurring? Here are some things. You want to be tracking at the client level. You want to have the client names so that you can go back at the end of the month, or if it's a client that you've worked for only one time, you want to be able to look at every hour you've logged for that client and communicating for that client and researching for that client, all those things, and see, was it worth it? Are there ways that I can make this worth it if it's not worth it for me right now? And if not, get a new client next month, okay? Projects. So we looked at how there's a couple different types of projects, right? There's projects like booking all your trips. There's projects like email newsletters that you have to do all the time for your blog. There's projects like a specific post or a specific article that you're writing for somebody. There's lots of different types of projects. Now, there's a difference though between tracking on a project level and a task level that I've kind of alluded to, but I just want to come out and say quite clearly. It doesn't always make sense for you to be tracking something like pitch this magazine, like Eating Well. Say you're writing a pitch for Eating Well. It doesn't always make sense that that middle manager level, that project level that you're tracking is going to be pitch for Eating Well magazine. It might make more sense that when you're pitching, you actually have 5 different middle manager levels. You have 5 project levels. One is for reading about markets. One is for matching ideas to markets. One is for writing the first level of the first paragraph of the pitch. One is the second paragraph of the pitch. One is the third paragraph of the pitch. And maybe you have another one, which is proofreading, fact-checking your pitches. So you might have 6 middle managers, 6 projects that are around pitching rather than one project for each pitch that you write. And we would do that because for you, it doesn't matter so much how much time you've spent on one pitch for a magazine, because the time you're spending on pitching, it's about you, right? It's not about, you know, that magazine or that client or what it's like to work with them or what it's like to research for them. You're trying to optimize your time, your marketing time. And that's why we would look at that from a task-based approach. So when I had my time tracker up, you'll notice a lot of things that I do that are internal, like newsletters, email, communicating with my assistant, planning trips, marketing activities, outreach, those I track as a task. Whereas things where I'm being paid a specific amount, those I'm going to track by that item so I can check if the amount made sense. Now, what about recurring versus one-off? I recommend that with clients, especially if you're new to time tracking or you're new to that client, that you track granularly. You track like per blog post or per article or per newsletter or maybe per week of social media scheduling. You track on that unit level to begin with because you're going to be changing your amount of time that you put into it quite rapidly, either with a new client as you learn the systems or when you're new to time tracking as you keep making adjustments now that you see how long things take. And that way you can compare per unit. So the unit, like I said, it could be a blog post, it could be an article, it could be a week of social media scheduling. You can compare those units over time in addition to just on a monthly or weekly level. How long does that category or that client take you? So again, that category level, sorry, or area of responsibility, that's like the tier one. That's that graph that I showed you where it's like admin versus this magazine versus writing your book. Those are really big blocks. Then that middle manager or project level, that's something that has tasks under it, but that you want to know how much time you're spending on that one thing. So that's why I said that's good for, you know, a blog post for a new client, but not necessarily for a blog post that you write all the time for your own blog that you do quickly. It's good for an article. It's good for putting together a proposal. If putting together a proposal is new for you and it's something that's going to take a long time, you want to use that middle manager project level for anything that has different tasks under it, but that you need to know how long that whole thing takes you. Okay. Now this goes into how do you make reporting manageable and usable? Is that if you aren't segmenting out those levels, that specific task of booking the hotels for that one destination on my multi-city itinerary, I don't need to know how long that specific things take, but I do need to track that. So we want to be able to look at the big picture, but we also want to be able to see with enough detail how to optimize the time that we're spending. So like I said, this is a lifelong process that we're talking about today. Don't worry if today you feel like I'm thinking about so many things, I don't know where to start. Start with your energy tracker and then start by setting up a time tracker and just tracking. Don't worry about looking at it every day. Look at it at the end of the week. Look at it once a month. So let's talk about trackers. So there's really a lot of them out there and I seem to find new ones all the time. Some of them are attached to invoicing software. I found one for a client yesterday that I think is going to be the answer to all of her dreams, but it's quite advanced. She does a lot of content marketing work where she's sending contracts to clients. She wants to be sending invoices and have a lot of reminders. She has problems with her clients paying on time. She wants to make sure that it's super clear for them what's in the contract. She has to refer back to that a lot. So I gave her a really advanced one that has lead tracking and funnel tracking, which is not something that most of you need. So I can tell you which ones I recommend across the board, but there might be other ones besides these two that you like. So people in the chat box are talking about Toggle. And I know actually one of my clients, I'm not sure if she's still on the call right now, had used Toggle. And when we started doing her time tracking, yes, she is still here. When we started doing her time tracking, she realized that she couldn't get that level of reporting detail that we needed, that we wanted to look at doing Toggle. So Toggle is one that I had recommended for a long time because I know a lot of people use it. And it's also got this start-stop functionality, which Office Time does as well, which I'll show you in a minute. But for reporting, it might not have the level of depth that you would actually want. So Toggle has a phone app. Most of these trackers will also have a phone app. The one that I used, which is called Office Time, I put down here, it's my personal choice, Office Time, is currently undergoing a round of Kickstarter funding to do some updates on it and make it look more, I say Mac versus PC. Toggle looks like Mac, Office Time looks like PC. So Office Time is currently undergoing a makeover to look a little more Mac. But let me just show you quickly in a full screen view. Don't freak out when you see how many things I have open on my computer, but let me show you a full screen view so you can see the start-stop functionality that a couple people had mentioned because I have it here on Office Time as well. So now you're going to see this crazy mirror window effect for a second. Cover that up as best I can. So if you can follow me all the way up here at the top of my screen, nope, that's Dropbox, there's this play button. So I previously was, that's not our webinar. I was previously tracking today's webinar, which I've now lost. Freelance time webinar, great. So previously I was tracking our webinar and you'll see that when I hit play, it turns green here at the top. Now I've got all this junk that my husband put on here so that I can have various things on my computer, but basically this play button should, as you're seeing, way again at the top of the screen, it's way up here at the top of the screen, this play button should be green and it should be kind of near your clock so that as you're working, if the play button isn't green, you notice. And then you go, oh crap, I'm not tracking my time, let me go turn on my tracker. So from here, I can start and stop different things. See, I can pause this, pause it, start, stop it. I can switch back to this other one that I started by accident. I can start different ones. I can do all of this from up here at the top. Now, I noticed Steph just said in the chat box that she has Office Time on her phone. Most of these do come on your phone. So like I was saying, if you are like me and you do a lot of email on your phone, then it's very easy for you to start and stop when you do your email on your phone as well. But I really like any of these trackers that have that play button type thing where you can very clearly see if you're tracking or not. Because, you know, we all check the time periodically on our machine up at the top. And so that's a really easy way when you're getting used to hitting play to know if it's going or not. After you've done it for about a month, like any habit, it becomes kind of ingrained. And I usually have my tracker running the vast majority of the time. It's like I'll forget here and there, but then usually I go to do something else and I automatically go to start my tracker. I realize I haven't tracked the coaching call with so-and-so, and I can just check my phone and see when our call started, and I can put that into the tracker. So toggle and office time are two big ones that a lot of people like. So I think we've gone quite long. Thank you guys so much for bearing with me. And I'm sorry for that weird mic issue. I'm still on the same mic. I don't know why it stopped working. But I don't want to keep you any longer because I'm sure that this has been a lot of information. So as I mentioned, we're going to be talking next week about goals. And one of the things about goals is that until you really know how you're spending your time, how much you can possibly accomplish with your time, until you have this time data, it can be really difficult to track and set and maintain and achieve a lot of your goals, because it's very easy to just say every month, oh, well, I didn't get to it, or, oh, well, I started it and it just took forever. So that's really one of the reasons why I wanted to do this time tracking bit before we get into talking about goals, because they help you know what is achievable. They help you see where you can make adjustments so that you are actually earning more with the same time that you're already working. And then after that, as I mentioned, we're going to talk specifically about pitch tracking. I've gotten a lot of questions in the past about pitch tracking. I'm going to talk about a couple different ways to do that, a couple organization methods. And thank you so much for chatting time tracking with me. Obviously, you can see it's a big passion for me because I see that it really makes a huge, huge difference for people being able to take on more and new work and not feel stressed about it and be able to fit it in and be able to expand their work and their income to reach their goals. So thank you guys so much for sticking around to hear me go on and on about this. And I look forward to talking about goals with you next week. Cheers, guys.